On the way to the bursar's office, new orders in hand, Esme couldn't feel that this was real.
I still can't believe they gave me a ship. I'm only a lieutenant.
Who has commanded ships in battle? What do you want, as an engraved invitation? This is an engraved invitation.
Protocol. I don't know all the protocol for it.
The memory of that hasty and scrambled assumption of command on despite did not reassure her.
That's what fast tapes are for. What about uniforms?
Right. Bursar's office, then the tailor's.
Swainson and Triggett, officer's outfitters, all services, greeted the new captain of a patrol ship with suitably restrained delight. An entire team of fitters measured her from tip to toe, then had her move. Sit, stand, walk, raise and lower her arms. When the fitters had done with her, Esme handed over her list of decorations so they could be added to the finished uniforms. She was feeling more and more that she was in some fantasy world. She was suddenly back in fleet. She was to command a ship. She had just ordered a full set of uniforms from what had to be the most expensive tailors in the universe. It was as if she'd fallen into one of the tales in which the despised outcast sister is transformed into a beautiful princess by magical hands. She did notice that Ser Triggett passed the bill discreetly to her father, who scanned it closely before handing over his credit cube. That night, they all had dinner at the Thornbuckle townhouse. She, her father, Brun, Kate, and Kevil Mahoney, who was finally out of rehab with his new arm. After the meal, the talk turned to Familius politics.
You young ladies will most likely not agree with me, but I see the Familius facing more and more trouble unless it reconstitutes its government on more rational lines.
That's what I keep saying. They need a constitution.
They need clear thinking. A bad constitution would not help.
But the first thing must be the mutiny. Without security, they won't have time to think clearly.
You are definitely my daughter, Esmea. Of course they must put down the mutiny first and repel any invaders. That's the job of the fleet. But while you are out there blowing up mutineers, someone here must be thinking clearly about the reasons for the assassinations and mutinies and other unrest that troubles the realm. Is that not so, Ser Mahoney?
Yes, of course, but I don't quite see how we're to do that. Bunny and I were working on it, but without Bunny's influence, I'm small potatoes and few in the hill, as the saying is. I rode his coattails.
Or drove him with them. I know you influenced his thinking a lot.
Well, it became clear to me when I was a young man that something was stifling opportunity for talent of all kinds. It took me a long time to figure it out. You think with colony worlds opening all around, with hundreds of populated worlds all linked by trade and expanding almost visibly, that there'd be plenty of chance to rise.
Some worlds are more conservative. Look at the Crescents, for instance.
Yes, that's what my professor said. And there was a lot of scoffing of the, that's just what they're like, what do you expect, from senior men of law who were content that it should be so. But I had the advantage of my grandfather's library. He had a passion for old books. By the time I was in law school, he'd long retired, and nothing pleased him so much as arguing over history with me, and not just legal history. One thing he convinced me of is that any system which does not give ample opportunity for talent to displace unearned rank will in the end come to grief.
What do you mean by unearned rank?
What you have, for instance, or for that matter, my son George. This is not to say you and others like you don't have talent. You do. But your talent is displayed, as it were, on velvet, like a precious jewel. Think of those women in the new text culture, Brun. Were they all stupid, lazy, incompetent?
No.
No. Every time society has given it a chance, it's been shown that an ordinary sampling of the population, including those considered inferior or hopeless, contains men and women of rare intelligence, wit, and ability. Just as ponds turn over their water yearly, revitalizing the pond's life, so a good stirring of the human pot brings new blood to the top, and we're all the better for it.
We had that happen in Altiplano. Our patrons thought their colonists were just stupid peasants, born and bred to be inferior and ruled by themselves. But we did quite well without our natural leaders.
And yet you have rich and poor, don't you?
Of course we do. But I like to think, with a smaller population and our educational system, we give the children of poor families more chance to show what they can do.
Boys, at least. And all the land brides are from wealthy families.
That's so. Our system is not perfect. But since we don't have rejuvenation, our young people know they will have a place in society at a reasonably young age.
Now there you've touched it. Even the old forms of rejuvenation, each pretty much limited to a single application because of side effects, widened the opportunity gap at the top end of society. Repeated rejuvenations made things worse, much worse. It would have been bad enough if it had been available only to the richest families, forcing youngsters like you to sit idly waiting for a chance to take responsibility in the family that never came. You, from your perspective, may not be able to see how much the education and lives of rich young people changed in the 10 years before you were born. But I did. And rich young people, kept out of the family business, can amuse themselves in all sorts of ways.
Then rejuvenation spread.
Yes. Take a professional man like myself, who has accumulated 40 years of experience in his field, and can return to a vigorous younger body. Why would he retire? Why would he take on a younger partner when he himself felt young again? It's like crystallization, spreading and freezing through society, making brittle what had been fluid.
But people want to live. That's natural.
Yes, it's natural. It's as natural as wanting to find the perfect love that lasts forever, or peace without disturbance. It's the old, natural, infant desire to have what you want when you want it forever. Up to now, the human race has been blessed by having such wishes impossible to fulfill. Harsh as it seems, the young have been able to count on their elders aging and then dying, making room. All human societies have been built on that awareness that everyone dies.
So we have to figure out how to live if they don't.
Exactly. Much as I dislike the benignity, their chairman's comment on endless adolescence hit the target. We need a range of maturity. If we're going to live for hundreds of years, we need to be grown-ups, not perpetual children. We need opportunities for the young, a chance for them to mature as well. We need to do something to include more of the population, to tie it together.
Can it be done?
I don't know, but we have to try, or we'll have a bloodbath, with the young and hopeless attacking the old and rejuvenated directly. We already have foreign enemies who tell us, who are adamant, that our use of unrestricted rejuvenation frightens them so much they will assassinate our head of state and consider invasion.
The Tarakians talked about this a little. They said the free traders weren't as affected because they could always go somewhere else, but they saw a lot of unrest that made them uneasy.
We've got to get people like that into the government. As long as the only people with power are the rich, rejuvenated oldsters, something's going to blow. There are a lot more people, including intelligent, thoughtful, decent people, who aren't rich or able to get rejuvenation. The last time I went over this with Bunny, we noticed that there are more unrejuvenated young people with a right to seats in council than rejuvenated ones with seats. That might give us a wedge, for as long as that majority lasts. But we still have to go outside the old families. However much inconvenience and trouble it may take to widen the franchise, a revolution would be far, far worse.
The hours ran out like water down a drain. A restless night's sleep, the salon appointment, a day spent in final fitting of the new uniforms. The sight of herself in the cape and long skirt of the mess dress startled her. She looked almost regal. In buying the luggage in which to pack them, she couldn't have crammed them into the carry-on, even if she'd been willing to. In finding out what she could about the crew she would have on her ship. A last flurry of other shopping when one of the fitters reminded her that a captain would be expected to pay calls on civilians and would need a civilian wardrobe as well. Esme took Brun along for that. Her father left for home that second night. She was surprised at how she missed him in the few hours left before her own departure. Then Brun and Kate took her to the shuttle terminal, and after a last round of goodbyes, she joined the stream of travelers in uniform heading for the fleet shuttle access. This time, the ID booth recognized her at once. She had only a moment's claustrophobia from the memory of her earlier arrest before the light turned green. The guard at the gate saluted when she arrived at Rockhouse Major.
Welcome home, Lieutenant. Your transport to Sector 7 HQ leaves in 4 hours, sir.
Thanks, Sergeant.
Esme hoped that was enough time for luggage transfer. She didn't want to lose her new finery. Meanwhile, she could look Baron up in the fleet database, now that she had access again. When she did, she turned away from the display in confusion.
Copper Mountain? What is Baron doing on Copper Mountain?
Harless Thornbuckle eyed the gray-haired man across the table. Tall, trim, square-shouldered, erect, with a look on his face that Harless knew came from command of a ship in the regular space service. A ship now at the service of anyone who could hire it.
But why would you want to go to Cerealis, the first place they'd look?
They won't, because they aren't looking for me, and no family member is there.
Never mind that they would be looking for him as soon as they knew he'd slipped his surveillance cuff. That discovery was hours away, thanks to his dentist. If he could finish his business with this fellow, make that quick run back to Castle Rock and return, get off this damnable station quickly enough, it wouldn't be a problem. The messages on his comm unit at home should make it clear that he was actually headed for his own estates. Besides, it was none of his hireling's business.
You can cut off communications, can't you?
Yes, or control them, but it's an out-of-the-way system.
All the better, isn't it? Low population, high productivity, not on regular trade routes. It's known as a family seat, so why would anyone look there?
We'd need more information.
I can get that for you. But can you do it?
Probably, yes. But it will cost you.
That's not a problem. I have plenty of money.
Fine. And suppose you get us off this station.
Off?
I didn't bring my ships into the station. Someone might see them and tell Fleet. That would be bad.
We can hire a yacht.
Just like that?
I am seated family. Whatever else happens, they can't take that away. And I have more than ample funds to hire any yacht up here. What do you need?
Let me check what's listed. Get us the Lillian C. Passenger capacity's 15. Bear. We've got crew. If they won't lease it bare, ask to speak to Denny. And when you get Denny, say, little ships have big ears. That should take care of it.
He sat back, tucked the comm unit in his pocket, and nodded at Harless.
Now?
How fast did you want to leave?
All right.
Harless called All Systems, where his name got him past the first two levels of reception and onto a personal sales officer.
I need to lease a yacht. What's available?
The man began describing yachts, transmitting the data. Harless made disparaging comments until he mentioned the Lillian C.
That's not so bad.
He listened to descriptions of a few more yachts.
That Lillian yacht, that sounds like what I'm looking for. How soon can she be ready?
6 hours, Sir Thornbuckle, but obtaining a crew...
Never mind the crew. I'll take care of that.
Ah, family retainers, I suppose.
Qualified crew.
We really prefer to have at least one All Systems...
If it's a matter of cost, I'm prepared to pay your crude rate.
Oh. Well then, how long do you need her for?
60 days. No, better make it 90. I've got to visit several systems. Burkholt, then Celeste. If I remember rightly, the transit time will eat up 40 days, and then there's my business on planet.
How about 90 with an option for another 90? You can contact any All Systems office to extend your lease. We have agents in both Burkholt and Celeste.
That will do very well. What are your provisioning options?
Well, there's the basic package, but for a gentleman of your rank, we usually recommend at least the gold level.
Fine, I'll be over shortly to sign and make the deposit. Put us down for the departure queue, would you?
Of course, Sir Thornbuckle.
Now it was Harless's turn to sit back and look at his new employee.
6 hours and she'll be ready.
Good. By the way, my name's Taylor. I'll go get the crew together. You get that information you said you could find and meet me at the All Systems office at 2100.
It occurred to Harless that his employee was giving him orders and very little information. Brunn turned away from the shuttle terminal.
Well, I'm glad she's back where she belongs, but we sure have a mess to deal with here. And I don't really have a clue where to start.
Oh, well, you might want to start by helping me finish up my mission so as I can get home. With that consuline out of the way and a new foreign minister, we ought to be able to get those trade restrictions lifted and those assets unfrozen, don't you think? And this would be a real smart time for the Familius to make nice to its neighbors.
You're leaving, too.
Well, hon, I can't stay here forever. And I figure I've given you folks about all the advice I can, without asking for a salary.
Oh, I'll miss you. But yes, we should be able to get your government's needs attended to. Though since my mother killed the former foreign minister, you might do better without my help.
Yeah, let's just see. I'll meet you for lunch, why don't I, and let you know how it went. The townhouse?
Fine.
Kate waved and turned away. Brunn started to offer her a ride, but realized that the ranger was more than capable of finding her own way. Brunn glanced aside to be sure her security detail was in place, and then walked tamely to her own transport.